Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Congressman Bob Latta shares his thoughts in the aftermath of this weekend's assassination attempt on former President Trump. Also this morning, outgoing Economic Development Director Dan Schaefer will join us to discuss his new role as President and CEO of the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance, which he will assume at the beginning of August. It's another Mental Health Monday. A new report brings to light the development of a disturbing trend among some teens, digital self-harm. And happening around town as part of their year-long 50th anniversary celebration, the Children's Mentoring Connection is hosting a summer picnic later this month. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 15th, 2024. Of course, the big story today continues to be the assassination attempt on former President Trump over the weekend, which still seems just difficult to say. Those are words that you just don't ever want to say, an assassination attempt on a president or former president. And obviously, a lot to be uncovered about this incident, and lots of details are still unknown. We'll be talking a little bit more about it here in just a bit. Over the weekend, we spoke with Congressman Bob Latta, got his thoughts on what we saw transpire in Pennsylvania on Saturday. The one thing, for the most part, we're going to leave all of the analysis and reporting to the networks, because they certainly have more resources to uncover the facts of this case than we could possibly hope to have at the local level. But the one thing that I would say on all of that is, don't get your news from Facebook. It was within hours of the shooting in Pennsylvania on Saturday that I saw the most incredible conspiracy theories start to pop up on Facebook and start to spread like wildfire. And it's just amazing to me. It demonstrated the worst of Facebook, the worst of social media, some of the things that were being said and spread online about this particular incident. And none of it is supported by any shred of evidence. I give you a perfect example. A friend of mine and I were talking yesterday morning about what had happened on Saturday. And I said, try this on for size with respect to all of these conspiracy theories and what may have happened and what may have motivated the shooter and all of this. I said, well, what about this? Isn't it at least plausible that this was only part one of a larger plot to take out both presidential candidates? You know, is it entirely inconceivable that in some dark corner of the World Wide Web that there might have been some people talking about doing away with both candidates as part of a hard reset of sorts on American politics? I mean, how many people have you heard say, it seems like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel? Is this the best choice that we can come up with? You know, in the days and weeks, over the past days and weeks, you've heard a lot of people say, is this the best choice? Can't believe that this is the best choice that we can come up with. And so would it be entirely conceivable that someone somewhere might have said, hey, let's take both of them out and we'll just do this hard reset of American politics? Now, again, I don't bring this up to start a rumor. I mention it simply because this is the sort of thing that can get started and take off like wildfire on social media and become believed, because it's not entirely implausible, but I just made it up off the top of my head. Absolutely no evidence that anything like that is afoot. I'm sure that question was raised at some point by Secret Service, FBI, Homeland Security, all of the... But I'm sure that that is something that perhaps was considered, but there is absolutely no evidence. I just made it up out of thin air, but I guarantee you I could post that online and it would get legs and, you know, people would believe it. So just don't get your news from Facebook, because it's just pick a reliable source. There are several. There are lots of them. Pick the one that you trust, but make sure that it is a legitimate news source to get your facts on this as the investigation continues. Couple of other thoughts with respect to this. There are certainly legitimate questions about how this shooter was able to take aim at the president from such a relatively short distance, and why those buildings that you see in the photographs of the layout of the rally in Pennsylvania that seem so close, why were those outside the perimeter? Why were those not better secured? I think it's probably too early to say that those buildings were not secured. I'm sure that the Secret Service looked at them, but maybe there was something that was overlooked, or... You know, who knows? There are legitimate questions that need to be answered and will be answered beginning as soon as today. I guess they'll be holding hearings in Congress, speaking with officials of the Secret Service about what went wrong here. But let's not jump to conclusions until all the facts are in with respect to that. So kind of interesting there. And it will be very interesting moving forward, obviously, with the Republican National Convention beginning today. There are going to be even more eyes on that. Perhaps that will it will be a boom for people watching the Republican National Convention who maybe wouldn't have tuned in otherwise, knowing that it was all pretty much a foregone conclusion what was going to happen, right? I'm sure there will be more people watching now, and I'm sure that the RNC, knowing that, will move to take advantage of it, as you would expect. But it will be also interesting to see how the tone, or if the tone of the convention changes. There were reports this morning that President Trump has rewritten his entire acceptance speech for later this week to focus on party unity, and to that end, both former President Trump and current President Biden have been saying all the right things in the 48 hours since, roughly 48 hours since all of this happened. It remains to be seen how long that will be the case, but it's very interesting the way the tone has changed just in the past 36 hours or whatever it's been. Since this incredibly sad event took place. So there's a lot of moving parts to this, obviously, and we'll be talking much more about it over the course of the next several days, to be sure. I thought this was kind of interesting, and I'll bring this up as just a note with respect to all of this. A Pew Research Center poll that was released ahead of Saturday's rally. So this was actually out, I believe, either Thursday or Friday. A new poll from Pew Research shows that a majority of Americans are already weary of the presidential election, and we're not even close to November. In this survey of more than 7,700 people, 87% said that the election season doesn't make them feel proud as Americans. Nearly 7 in 10 saying the 2024 campaign is already too negative, and it's only July. Some of the specifics, just 24% say that Biden is mentally sharp. Remember, up until a day and a half ago, that was the biggest story in the campaign cycle. Conversely, 64% of those polled say Trump is mean-spirited. And again, this is before everything that transpired on Saturday. By demographic, Donald Trump has a significant advantage over Joe Biden with voters 50 and older, 48% to 39%. Biden enjoys wider support with voters under 30, 48 to 28%. And while Election Day is still 4 months out, the Pew poll showed that hypothetically, if the election was held today, 44% would vote for Trump, 40% for Biden, 15% say that they would back third-party candidate Robert F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And now, again, that was all out before what happened on Saturday, and that will be another interesting dynamic in the coming days and weeks. Typically, a president who is the target of an assassination attempt would see their poll numbers go up. Certainly happened to Ronald Reagan back in the early 80s. And again, given that this is an election year, remember in 81 when President Reagan was shot, it wasn't an election year. This is. And so, you know, that could be a game changer in this race in that respect as well. So a lot of things, a lot of moving parts that will be interesting to pick apart as we move forward from this point. So we're going to talk more about that. Again, our conversation with Congressman Bob Latta coming up here shortly. And we have lots of other stuff to do this morning as well. Like I said, we're going to leave most of the reporting on this to the networks and focus on other things that are going on. But certainly, it's never going to be far from our minds.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a chance of a storm, a high around 90. Chance of a storm tonight, low in the mid-70s. The Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation is seeking grant proposals for two community improvement opportunities.
The first focuses on gathering spaces like parks, community buildings, and other public spaces. The second grant opportunity is for neighborhood revitalization projects. These could include neighborhood cleanups, tree planting, permanent floral planting, or other needs in public spaces.
Community Foundation President and CEO Brian Treese says the grants are opportunities to come together as neighbors, coworkers, friends, and residents of Hancock County to make this a better place to be. Get more on these grant opportunities in this story on our website. Hearings will begin this week on the future of Ohio House Bill 68.
The law bans gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth. It also prohibits transgender student athletes from playing women's and girls' sports. Right now, there is a temporary block on the law until the hearing is over. The law was supposed to go into effect on April 24th.
Onan's Yolanda Harris reporting. New dual-use permits will allow medical marijuana dispensaries in Ohio to also sell recreational marijuana.
And the division tells me that they received 134 applications from facilities that want to have additional dispensaries. Given the foundation already laid through the medical marijuana control program, current medical permit holders who have already undergone many of the comprehensive checks are anticipated to have a much quicker turnaround to issue licenses.
Onan's Kiara Lake reporting. The Findlay Rotary Club has presented its Service Above Self Award to Gary Steed. The award is presented annually to a non-Rotarian in the community who exemplifies the Rotary ideals of professional leadership and service. Findlay Rotarian Harold Puck Rowe nominated Gary, saying that he has touched so many lives in such a positive way and that we need more humans like Gary. Get more on Gary and the Rotary's Service Above Self Award in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
The story that will almost certainly dominate the news cycle for quite some time to come is, of course, the attempt on the life of former President Donald Trump on Saturday at a rally in Pennsylvania. In the aftermath of that shooting, elected officials from both sides of the aisle took to the media over the weekend to express their outrage and condolences to the individual who lost his life. Well wishes for the two victims who remain in critical condition and for Donald Trump himself. Yesterday, we spoke with Congressman Bob Latta. Congressman, it sounds even surreal to say those words, an assassination attempt on former President Trump. How do you even begin to verbalize your reaction to what transpired on Saturday?
Well, you know, if you go back to the 1981, you think about when Ronald Reagan was shot, and it was actually almost surreal that the American people couldn't believe that that could be happening. And so fast forward to, you know, to yesterday afternoon and to actually see everything on television happening, you know, we sent our prayers to the president you know, hopefully, you know, that we didn't know at the time if he'd been severely hurt.
Right.
But, you know, to be injured the way he was and, you know, our prayers with him and his family. You know, this is the United States. You know, we saw things in this country by elections, and that any type of violence like this is absolutely you just cannot tolerate it. And you know, you want to also thank the Secret Service, the folks that were up on top there, the the snipers that they had that took that person out immediately, and I do mean immediately,
right.
That, you know, if it hadn't been for them, who knows what could have happened.
Exactly. As of the moment that we are having this conversation, we do not know what the motivation of the shooter was. I think everyone's assuming it was political, but there won't be a definitive answer for quite some time, if ever. That being said, a lot of people are talking about the temperature of American politics right now. Given what has happened, how concerned are you about some of the rhetoric and rancor in the political discourse, and even what some people have been saying and posting on social media in the hours after this shooting?
Well, you know, first, you're absolutely correct. This investigation is ongoing. They're trying to determine why this guy did what he did. You know, they're checking to see if there was anybody else that might have been complicit in this. And so I know that the law enforcement from the federal and state and local, they're all doing their due diligence right now in the investigation. And if the next phase is, of course, in Congress, and I know that the speaker and has already said that we're going to investigate what happened, find out from Secret Service, FBI, and Homeland Security. So they'll be appearing before House committees. When it comes to, I know that President Trump's campaign has said, and I think probably all your viewers have already seen or read what's already been put out, that you know, they're going to really be careful what's out there. And so I know that their campaign. I've also heard that President Biden's campaign is taking down a whole bunch of commercials right now.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really important that, you know, I think, first of all, that we have to understand as a nation that we have our First Amendment rights out there. And at the same time, you know, I have to be careful, especially if it gets posted on social media and things like that. And because you never know what triggered this individual.
Exactly.
It might be this person never had a criminal, I'm not sure, you know, if he never even had a criminal record or a driver or a speeding ticket or anything like that.
Yeah.
But what motivated this individual to do such a heinous act?
This is something we've talked about in the past. You are something of a political historian, so I know you can appreciate this. Obviously not the first incident of violence against a political figure, but this is the first time, I think, since the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy that something of this nature has happened in an election year. And I know right now people don't want to talk about politics. This obviously transcends politics, but the politics are still there, and November is not very far away. Do you believe that this at all will change the trajectory of this race?
Well, I think it's going to make some people out there think there maybe is focus on the real issues of this campaign. And because I think, that President Trump, when he left office, we had a 1.4% inflation rate, and how good the economy was. And I think that you'll probably see a huge focus on that. But again, you're absolutely correct. We've seen assassination attempts on, of course, with President Reagan being shot. You saw with Harry Truman when two Secret Service agents were killed protecting him when he was attacked. And so you kind of go back through history, and unfortunately, we've had too many presidents in this country that have been assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very important that as we look over the next several days, is to let law enforcement find out the who, what, where, and why's. But again, I know that some of the things I've heard already is that they've been checking to see if this person had been posting things on social media or anything like that.
Yeah,
and to find out if there's anything there. But then the question becomes is, what happens if there's not much out there? And so the question then becomes is what made this person
right.
do such a horrible act? Because again, one person was killed. We've got two people seriously wounded in the hospital right now. And we have to really remember those individuals too that were just there, just exercising their right of assembly and their right to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as I said, that, this country, that we want to make sure that our political process plays out the way it's supposed to. And so, I think that just hearing some of the talk from both of the campaigns right now, that we'll see over the next week and coming days after that as to what happens. But I think that they'll probably see that on both sides, they'll say, be careful what you say out there at this time.
Yeah. Obviously, it's not going to be very long before all of the politics comes back into play with the your party's convention coming up this week. How do you believe that this will change the tone of that event, if at all?
Well, first, I think it was very important because President Trump said that, there's some people out there in the media are thinking, well, are we even going to have a convention or is it going to be changed? And he said, no, we're moving forward with the convention right as it's supposed to be. And I think that's important. I think that, just being grazed like he was and bleeding and having the Secret Service all over him yesterday, they got him up, but just showing everybody there that he was okay. And, but I think that, the tenor of this convention is really going to focus on moving this country forward and making sure that the Republican Convention has the gets out to the American people for what we stand for, but also what the second Trump presidency is going to look like.
Our conversation yesterday with Congressman Bob Latta in the aftermath of this weekend's assassination attempt on former President Trump. We should note that we did reach out to other experts and other elected officials, including Senator Sherrod Brown and Senate candidate Bernie Moreno, both of whom declined our invitation to share their thoughts. With us in the studio now is the current but outgoing Economic Development Director, Dan Schaefer, who has or will soon be taking the beginning of next month, be taking on a new role as President CEO of the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance. You'll be the grand poobah, as it were.
Good morning, Chris.
So thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, for the benefit of those who don't know, what exactly is the role of the Alliance CEO? I mean, it seems like the various entities under the Alliance umbrella, Economic Development, the Chamber, CVB, all kind of run like well-oiled machines unto each other. So what is the CEO of the Alliance really have to do?
That's a really good question that is asked all the time, and you alluded to it in your opening comment there. Really, the role of the CEO of the Alliance is to make sure the trains run on time. The Visitors Bureau, the Chamber, the Economic Development, and their directors, as you point out, are well-oiled machines. It's really just keep that focused, the energy focused, keep the mission focused, which is driving growth and prosperity in Findlay and Hancock County. So it's not a heavy lift. It's actually going to be a delightful position to have, working with great stakeholders, elected officials, county, city, and business leaders. It's really a privilege for me to step into this role. It's going to be hard going out from economic development. I'm not going to give that up immediately. I'm helping with the transition there. But CEO piece is something that I didn't consider even a year ago. But with Don Bruce doing an excellent job and retiring here in the next few weeks, I thought, okay, this is probably an opportunity for me to continue with leadership and some continuity within the organization.
As you mentioned, the primary responsibility is to sort of keep everyone focused on the mission. And how do you do that, and what do you see as the mission moving forward?
Well, the mission has not changed. It really is as simple as driving growth and prosperity. It used to be in Findlay and Hancock County. Now we say the region because we are a global company or a global organization in terms of how we meet people in Japan, across the globe, here locally, mm-hmm. With the Chamber especially, and with the Convention and Visitors Bureau drawing tourism to Findlay. So really, it's just something the boards of the governing board of the Alliance, there's a governing board which makes decisions financially, policy-wise. Each of the divisions has their own boards, advisory boards we call them. Each has 15 members. And so across the divisions themselves, the governing board itself, there are approximately 60 community and business leaders that advise and inform each of those leadership, each of those directors as to what they are doing in their offices. And so my role is really just to facilitate those meetings, another set of ears, a resource for those directors, and indeed a resource for the staff that work for the directors.
I know a lot of times when there is a change at the top in leadership of any organization or company, what have you, one of the advantages to bringing someone in from the outside rather than promoting from within or filling the role from within is that it brings fresh eyes. It brings a new perspective that you might not otherwise get. That can be very valuable. How do you sort of replicate that? How do you bring in fresh eyes and accomplish that when you are, in fact, stepping up from within?
Well, there are advantages and disadvantages, I think, behind that comment. In the past, historically, my predecessors, who have all done wonderful jobs, really, it's a legacy of leadership that I'm stepping into. Mm-hmm. In my role, stepping into this from being within the organization for the past 10, 11 years, is that I've seen how the trains run. I see how they work. I understand the organization, the financials, the budget, the people, which brings a whole different set of experience to the role. In the past, we've had, and my predecessors being plucked, if you will, from outside coming in, there's been a bit of a learning curve, training, if you will, which I think will not be there when I step into this role in a couple weeks, really kind of hit the ground running.
And to that end, the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance is a bit of a unique structure in that it encompasses all of those legs under one roof with economic development in the Chamber and the CVB. So what are the benefits? And I know when the Alliance, you go back years ago, when the Alliance was initially formed, there was some controversy about that. There was some discussion over whether that was actually appropriate. Talk about how do all of those things function symbiotically? Under that structure that we have?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a question we get asked by other organizations outside of Findlay, other states, other communities that have their own economic development organizations. And you must remember that the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance, at its core, is an economic development organization, driving growth and prosperity and bringing business and sports tourism to Findlay. But we've had other communities, Warsaw, Indiana, Columbus, Indiana, others that are similar in size to Findlay, asking us frequently, how do you do what you do? And mm-hmm. in other words, bringing three organizations together under one roof, which is quite unusual and unique. So it's a best practice, and it takes intention. It takes the engagement of, as I mentioned earlier, active boards of directors and their chairs and their vice chairs that meet monthly to advise and inform the work that we do.
You mention that you clearly will be involved in the transition at Economic Development, given that you will be overseeing that position moving forward. What are you looking for in terms of filling that position?
Well, another good question. Part of it's selfish on my part. I don't want to give it up, but but I know that I will do that. I will keep my stay involved, at least in the near term. We have quite a number of projects that we're working on, some of which your audience is familiar with, others that we're working on that are new. And so I would like to see those to fruition, but I'll be able to do that in the new role. We will pursue a documented process for looking for the next director of Findlay-Hancock County Economic Development. There is a relatively short list of individuals throughout the economic development professional world that will probably raise their hands and say, I'm interested in that role. And we'll sit down and talk to them.
I was going to say that given our legacy as being a top micropolitan community for, I don't know, what, 89 years running now or something.
10 years, Chris, 10 years.
Along those lines, I would imagine that this is probably a highly sought after position.
It is. I've had others come out and reach out to me prior to this announcement and really pick my brain about the opportunity down the road. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, working at the Alliance has been a privilege and a joy, but at some point I'll hang up the spurs down the road, not making any announcements here, but just planning for that succession. And we've had those conversations internally and externally.
While we have you here on an economic development note, I want to ask you about this and get your thoughts. It was announced just the other day that Sheetz is actually going to build a second retail location in addition to the one that's already being constructed at I-75 and County Road 99. A lot of things going on at that interchange right now. But an additional retail store on the east side, again, when we had you here when they announced their facility, that was not necessarily known whether that would be part of the plan. That's got to be good news.
Well, at that time that we announced the production facility out on County Road 212, County Road 99, we were unaware of the Sheetz stores that might be here in Findlay, although it's not a surprise because the facility that they're building here north of town here, breaking ground here shortly, actually in the next few weeks, is going to be in support of new stores and expansion of Sheetz Corporation into Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. So the fact that they're doing a couple here in Findlay, I believe there's one going up in North Baltimore, is really to fuel that expansion going forward.
Mm-hmm. But it also is, again, more jobs, more economic investment. I mean, it's certainly a win-win all the way around.
It is. And I get questions of retail all the time. Retail is a different animal all by itself. And you mentioned the Sheetz stores. That's a classic example of economic development. Typically, when it's a retail opportunity, we may be the last ones to find out because they just make the announcement they want to be here. Mm-hmm. I got a call a couple years ago from Starbucks asking about some permitting. Okay, I gave them the information. About a year later, they're putting a store up. And so I joke about that, but that's the way retail works.
Yeah. But it also demonstrates the fact that economic development on the corporate side, which again, as you say, is much more of what you're involved in, does tend to lead to more economic development on the retail side. And it all is beneficial for the community, jobs and tax revenue and all of that.
Imagine that, driving growth and prosperity.
Yeah. Dan Schaefer with us this morning, outgoing Economic Development Director and incoming President CEO of the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance as of the beginning of August. Dan, thanks very much for dropping by and congratulations on the new gig.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
There is a new report just released in the past week or so from Florida Atlantic University. A study found that since 2016, digital self-harm has increased 88% among American teenagers. In 2021, 12% of American teens anonymously posted hurtful content about themselves online. The study goes on to say those who do this are more likely to be female, more likely to have experienced cyberbullying themselves, and are more likely to be non-white. It opens up the question, why do they do this? Well, joining us this morning is Nikki Seidel. She is Clinical Supervisor of Youth Services at the Family Resource Center. Nikki, first of all, Is this something, digital self-harm, that you have encountered in the past, or is this something that is a new phenomenon to you?
Honestly, this is something that is not super familiar to us.
Well, it still is relatively rare. It's 12% of American teens. So this does seem to be a new iteration or a new evolution of this phenomenon of self-harm.
It is. It is. While cyberbullying is not uncommon, mm-hmm. and self-harm is unfortunately not uncommon, the digital self-harm mm-hmm. is something that we're not hearing a lot about, and doesn't shock me, though. It doesn't surprise me, because youth are more and more frequently looking for new ways to seek help. So whether that is, you know, directly reaching out or using social media, mm-hmm. whatever it takes to seek assistance, they'll do whatever it takes.
It's not surprising that anything that can be done online, positively or negatively, will be done online. So that aspect of it is not necessarily surprising. And we have talked about cyberbullying in the past. We know about this problem, which continues to be a big issue.
Significant, yes. Yeah, youth are spending more and more time online. And whether it is, in chat rooms through their video games, on, you know, Discords through, mm-hmm. you know, various groups, Snapchat, TikTok.
Even text messaging, group texts.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing all the time where bullying occurs, and it's very rarely in person anymore.
That's interesting. It's to the point where you rarely see it in person, and you most often see it in the cyber universe. And again, you mentioned all of those different platforms for cyberbullying, because I can hear a lot of parents say, well, my kids aren't on Facebook. That's not an issue. But there are so many other avenues
where
this can manifest itself.
Yes. And we just had a training a few weeks ago within FRC, and it was based on a lot of ways that I'd never even heard of before.
Yeah.
She was speaking of social media platforms and communication, and I'd never heard of them.
It's like anything, that technology moves so fast, almost like playing whack-a-mole.
Yes, and the kids know them.
Yeah.
And we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Right.
They are far smarter than we are
as
adults.
Right.
And
when it comes to the technology, for
sure. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
The other, so that's one component of this. And then the other is the whole self-harm aspect. When we talk about digital self-harm, there's the digital, but then the self-harm.
Yes.
This is such a difficult thing for people, lay people, to understand to begin with. Help us understand the whole idea of self-harm and why teens will do this.
You know, a lot of people think that they do it simply for attention, because it gets them attention. And that's not it at all. Teens quite often engage in self-harm as a release from stress. They engage in self-harm as a release from mental pain, emotional pain, or just the overwhelming feelings that they're experiencing on a daily basis. So whatever their self-harm is,
mm-hmm.
whether that is going online and posting things that make people reach out to them and, you know, ask them if they're okay and reach out and try to engage them, or if it is physical forms of self-harm, such mm-hmm. as cutting,
mm-hmm.
it releases that tension and draws focus to that pain. They no longer think about that original pain that they were focusing on at the time.
You mentioned that it is not to get attention, except that maybe through a call for help.
It is.
I mean,
it is. Ultimately, they are wanting help, and maybe they've asked for help from others and not received it.
Or they've tried to ask and people haven't gotten the message.
Yeah.
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 So how do we approach it if, as a parent, as a loved one of a teen, if we find that there is something of this going on, again, whether physically or digitally now, we have to think of this, but if we come to believe that this may be happening, how do you approach it?
Talk to them. That's always the first step, is try to talk to them. They may shut you down the first time because they're teenagers, and having an adult try to talk to you about whatever's going on.
We all remember being teenagers.
Yes, yeah. Yes, I was a teenager. I was not a pleasant one. I remember, you know, my apologies.
Yeah.
To everybody. But try to talk to them. And if it's not successful the first time, try again. You know, leave them a note, send them a text. If, you know, I know that sounds silly, but, you know, if that's their thing, if it's the digital, block the fake or anonymous account that they're using, track their internet activity. If you're concerned about that, monitor what they're doing. Adolescents under the age of 13, they're not mature enough to know what they're doing.
The thought just crossed my mind about this. Would teenagers be turning to this digital self-harm as a way to mask what they are doing? If they're cutting, again, which is kind of the quintessential self-harm practice, that can be fairly easy to detect. I mean, you know, when an adult or a teacher or a parent, you know, whoever may see those signs, that's harder to cover up. You're doing digital self-harm. That's much more difficult to detect. Is that an attraction? Is that, you know, a quote-unquote selling point for this?
It very much could be. It's a lot easier to delete extra profiles.
Yeah.
You know, hide things. Mm-hmm. Parents don't always think to do cell phone checks.
Yeah.
Xbox accounts are easy to duplicate. Those things are very easy to manipulate for teens. Like I said, they're very smart.
The whole self-harm phenomenon, again, whether we're talking about digital or physical self-harm, is this a precursor to suicide?
At times, yes.
Can be.
And that's something that parents don't like to think about.
Mm-hmm.
It's very scary, you know, as a mom and as a grandparent or a caregiver.
Yeah.
None of us want to think about. Not always.
Yeah.
For some, it is that release, but as it's no longer effective, it can
escalate.
Increase. Can escalate. And sometimes it's accidental. They can take it just too far.
Really disturbing. Like I said, the whole practice of self-harm is really, really difficult for a lot of people to understand. And adding this digital self-harm just makes it even more complicated and more difficult to understand. So as we always say, if someone has a question or wonders, how do I approach this? I mean, obviously reaching out to resources such as FRC.
Yeah. You know, it's just crucial to understand why young people engage in any sort of, you know, whether it's digital self-harm or self-harm in general, mm-hmm. and helping them develop healthier coping mechanisms at any age is so important, and communicating with them.
We are fortunate to have those resources here locally. We have a link on our webpage to the study from Florida Atlantic University that we referenced at the top. If you want to learn more about some of the details that they uncovered, it really is an interesting story. You can go to goodmornings.net. Again, Nikki Seidel is Clinical Supervisor of Youth Services for the Family Resource Center here locally. And Nikki, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This is what we need after the kind of weekend that we had and all the bad news. We need kind of the lighter side, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And we have a good llama story here. That's what we need, a good llama story. Bangor, Maine is the dateline on this one. Bangor, Maine, where a llama briefly escaped from his home, apparently to avoid being seen by the dentist. Well, I can understand how he feels. Nobody likes to go to the dentist. Jeffrey the llama was supposed to have a cleaning, but when owner Rena Pessner opened the gate for the veterinarian, the llama bolted. They actually had to call in Bangor Police Department Animal Control. Quickly responded to the call, but Jeffrey came home on his own after a stroll around the neighborhood. It is possible, according to the police department report, it is possible that Jeffrey hadn't kept up on his brushing and flossing twice a day and was embarrassed that the whole barn would soon know. presumably, after Jeffrey got back, he got his cleaning and everything was well with the world. But some anxious moments there in Bangor, Maine, with the llama on the loose. Let's see. This is crazy. Out of Long Island, New York, Florence Leslie Miller, age 27, was arrested recently under suspicion of stealing about $6,000 worth of handbags, jeans, and other items from the same TJ Maxx store 30 times over the course of the past year. 30 times over the past year, this lady went into the same store and pilfered a bunch of stuff. $6,000 worth of stuff. City Prosecutor Douglas Haubert tells local news reporters, "I've never seen a person go this long without being caught. What exactly was her ultimate undoing? I don't know. But Ms. Miller was arrested on 30 misdemeanor theft charges, according to the city prosecutor's office." How does that even happen? How do you go that long shoplifting without getting caught? That is borderline impressive, actually. You can go that many times without getting caught. I don't know. Let's see here. Speaking of thefts, this is out of Beaverton, Oregon. Police say a backpack with nearly $50,000 worth of trading cards and jewelry has been recovered. Apparently, the owner was riding one of the public transit buses there in Beaverton, Oregon, when this individual dropped the backpack while leaving, well, not the buses, the train. Apparently, there's a train that runs from Portland International Airport to Beaverton. And at one point, this individual who had the backpack dropped it while leaving the train. Surveillance video shows a woman taking the backpack just seconds after it was dropped. Person dropped it. They went back to find it. It was already gone. So she reported it. The woman, and I don't have her name, the owner of the backpack, but she reported it, obviously, to police. who could not locate the backpack initially, but detectives found valuable trading cards being sold online. You know where this is going, right? Whoever recovered the bag decided to sell the stuff online. Detectives promptly arranged a meeting with a woman to buy some of the trading cards, and they actually met, to make the story even better, they met at the train station where the backpack was dropped originally. That is when one Don Castro was placed under arrest. All of the trading cards and the jewelry were recovered and returned to the unnamed victim. When will the thieves learn? You try to sell this hot stuff online, they're going to catch you. I mean, I hope they don't learn that lesson. It makes it a lot easier for law enforcement, but gee whiz. I think at one point they'd figure this out. Let's see. Got to have a story out of Florida. And this one from Lakeland, Florida, where Marcus Jamar, age 34, has been arrested after falling asleep in the drive-thru of a Taco Bell. He was charged with DUI. Falling asleep in the drive-thru at a Taco Bell. Police say his eyes were bloodshot and watery, and he was slow to react, was sweating profusely, and his breath smelled of alcohol, according to local news reports. A search of Mr. Jamar's vehicle confirmed their assumption as they found an open bottle of Crown Royal. Mr. Jamar was arrested, charges of DUI, and taken to Polk County Jail, where he was also charged with a number of other offenses. But I got to think, that's not the first time that's happened in a Taco Bell drive-thru, right? Late-night runs to Taco Bell are often the result of a night of too much partying. I can't believe that's the first time that's ever happened. It's kind of every quintessential stereotype about Taco Bell drive-thrus in the middle of the night, right? And finally, in the broken news, this actually is some good news, and maybe Mr. Jamar of Lakeland, Florida could benefit from this rehab program. It is called the TAP Social Movement. It's actually in the United Kingdom. Aims to keep prisoners from reoffending by teaching them how to make beer. That's the program. If you are leaving prison and you have a stable job with employers that genuinely care about your well-being, you immediately have the framework that enables you to rebuild your life. This according to the co-founder of the TAP Social Movement, Paul Humpherson. The organization set up a brewery specifically to employ ex-cons, and reoffending rates among participants has decreased substantially. Of the 50 ex-cons employed by TAP, only 6% have reoffended. The average in the UK recidivism rate is 50%. So that's pretty good. According to one employee, quote, "You think you'll never be treated with respect again when you first get out of prison, but at TAP, they restored my faith." How about that? That is really cool. Teach him how to brew beer. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You know that summer is a big time for DIY projects. It's also a big time for shopping for a new home. People do a lot of both this time of year. And with that in mind, every year, the home improvement site Fixer, F-I-X-R, I don't know if you're familiar with the website. It's all about home improvement and so on. They poll construction and remodeling experts as to which features, which home features are considered must-haves in the eyes of those looking to switch things up, either by remodeling their home or in searching for a new home. What are the top must-have features in homes? And these things change, you know, from year to year. Some things are universal, but there are trends. According to this year's survey, the standout feature is a kitchen island. That is at the top of the wish list for a lot of folks either remodeling or searching for a new home. A kitchen island is very hot right now. Apart from being featured in countless TV renovations, people are after the additional seating and functionality that an extra counter can provide. Kitchen islands are very, very in right now. Coming in second was a walk-in pantry. A walk-in pantry. 43% of those who were polled in the survey say that their clients were after an extra space and more space for their stored goods. Walk-in pantry. So again, not a big surprise that the kitchen is the centerpiece of, you know, the top items on the wish list, because that is frequently the case. But I thought that was kind of interesting. 31% said a dedicated laundry room was a must-have feature. That was third place, dedicated laundry room. So if you have one of those in your home, then you're kind of ahead of the curve. We have those one of those in our house. So that's good. Let's see. A patio for outdoor entertaining was fourth place on the must-have list or the wish list at 30%. Rounding out the top five was a perennial classic, hardwood floors. 25% of those in the survey said hardwood floors would be right up there in their wish list, whether their new home has them or their scrubbing off the shag carpeting, taking up the shag carpeting to find them underneath. Both home buyers and DIYers say hardwood floors never go out of style, so that makes them very desirable as well. So the top five DIY projects or wish list items on a home. So again, you can take a couple of things from that. Number one, if you're looking to improve the value of your home, that's what home buyers are looking for. If you have those things in your home, maybe this would be a good time. You've been thinking about maybe putting it on the market. That is a good sign if you have any or all of those items to offer potential buyers. That's what they're looking for. So, happening around town as part of their year-long 50th anniversary celebration, the Children's Mentoring Connection hosting a summer picnic later this month. And Stacy Shaw is here from the CMC. Stacy, thanks very much for coming by. Along with Jerry McNamee from the Findlay YMCA, which is actually helping out with this. I guess you are helping out with this event, right?
We are. We are. Very we're good. Bringing the games for the Fun for All at Riverbend Park this Very Saturday. Cool. So RY and the Fly Van will be there.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit. First of all, Stacy mentioned 50th anniversary. This has been a year-long thing. We've talked about it a couple of different times through the course of the year with things that you've had going on. It's a big milestone.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so we just tried to spread out and make it a year-long celebration, and this is another thing that we were adding to that. So it'll be next Saturday from 11 to 3. We'll be out at Riverbend Park, and we'll be at the Lodge. So rain or shine, it will be happening.
Okay.
Just looked this morning. Looks like we're going to have fabulous weather, so we hope that that continues throughout the week as far as what it's going to be. But
So talk a little bit about what will be happening.
Yeah, so this is, we've made this a part of the Fun for All series that the Community Foundation is supporting. Mm-hmm. So we got some funding through that. Also reached out to the YMCA and actually saw Jerry in the hall, and he's like, do you have something for Fun for All, or for the family, for the Family Y? And so we did, and so we partnered with them on this also. So it's a way for us to continue our partnerships and bring things together.
Great opportunity for those mentors and mentees to get together, but not just for mentors and mentees?
Absolutely. So we started there, and we were starting that with our picnic, and then we thought of how can we make this bigger and more community supported, because we want mentors from our past and mentees to join us, but we also want to meet some new people in the community. So we wanted to open it up to, it's open to anyone. It is free. We will have food there. We'll also have some bounce houses. Jerry will be there with the Y on the Fly bus. So just lots of opportunities to really, what we're all about is to connect. So if that's connecting with your mentor and mentee, or if that's connecting with your family for the day, great way to unplug and get together.
Absolutely. So Jerry, talk a little bit about some of what you are bringing out to this big wing ding here.
So our Y on the Fly van goes around and supports. It takes the YMCA's mission outside of our building. Mm-hmm. So you'll see us around town, but like Stacy said, they called us up, invited us to come be a part of this, which is what the Y loves to do. We love collaboration. We love being able to support others' missions and to be a part of it. So our Y on the Fly this for this event, we'll bring out our mobile Gaga pit. So there'll be Gaga ball set up. Some art, some crafts, some quick, easy things along those lines. And then the other part, this is fun. We bought a drop-down pickleball court.
Ah.
So you take the lines of the pickleball court, you put it there, you put the lines out. Introductory stuff, you can play if you've never played it before, but it can go anywhere, so we're going to set it up in a parking lot.
Okay.
Good opportunity to, I know when I play, it's one of those things I like to think I was still an athlete, but my body says otherwise. But even the senior ladies over at the East Branch Y, when they play pickleball, I'll leave sweating profusely, and they're like, good job, and I'm out of breath, and they're fine. So it is really an activity for everybody.
That is, I was going to say, that really cool, that because that is an intergenerational mm-hmm. sort of thing. I mean, any and all ages can participate.
Oh, yeah, it's great, and it's a fun activity. Mm-hmm. Really quick and easy to learn as well. I know my sons, we have some pickleball paddles at our house, and my sons who are 5 and 7 will play. They're not that good, but we're learning, but they,
are they better than you are though?
I tend to go that scene out of Billy Madison where like you're all in big trouble with the dodgeball scene. Like it gets to a point where I'm like, no, I have to win. And so it doesn't matter their age, but they do well, but they might leave crying from time to time, and I get yelled at by my wife.
How cool is this? And you were touching on it. How cool is this to be able to partner with the Children's Mentoring Connection and really vibes well with the mission of the Y?
Well, they used to be our neighbor. They did move, but not by their own. But the relationships that the Y has, and then even the personal side of stuff with Stacy and the mentors, and Larry Jones is a big volunteer at both organizations. It is really nice, and to have somebody like Stacy call and say, I want you guys there, that also means a lot, because I know her expectations are very high. So I know this event on Saturday is going to represent everybody really well, because Children's Mentoring Connection doesn't do anything halfway. So and for them to be a part of us, we take it as a compliment that they think, we're going to do this, and we need the why. So that's really honored. Like, we're really gracious about that, and honored that they think of us in that. Because if we weren't doing a good job, I know Stacy wouldn't tolerate it and wouldn't invite us.
and Stacy, as we mentioned, because this is community-wide, it is a real great opportunity for people to see just what it is that Children's Mentoring Connection does, and those types of activities that connect the mentors and the mentees, and just how fun it can be to be a part of the program.
Right, and that's what...
you know, makes mentoring an easy part of that is so much of it is it's built around fun and connecting with people. So this is, and we'll have other examples there and ways that you can be a part of our program. And, you know, as you mentioned, through all of that, the mentor is not alone. So we are there to support them. We're there to support the families as well. And then we're there to support the kids. So it's all part of that connections as a whole. Mm-hmm. And we want to help build that. So we will definitely have, Jenny will be there sharing information about how you can get your child enrolled in our program, either in our school-based program or our community-based program, both of which we support. And then we also are open to taking more volunteers. You know, we are just gearing up for the school-based time. And so we're looking for volunteers for that. We're always looking for additional male mentors as well. And we have great things that we do with our partnerships in the community. As Jerry mentioned, you know, one of our partnerships is if you are a member of the YMCA, then you can bring your mentee along with you and to do different things in the Y. So we really have that partnership that goes year long.
That is awesome. And you mentioned the school-based program. It is getting to be that kind of, that time of year again. So got to start thinking about that. So give us all of the details on the event. The summer picnic is happening this Saturday?
Yes, Saturday the 20th. So we will be out there at Riverbend Park. Okay. And we will be there from 11 to 3. And so we will have food for as long as it lasts. So we hope everyone comes out. We will also have Travelin' Tom's coffee truck there, and we'll have some drinks available for a period of time. And we'll have all kinds of games set up. As you know, as Jerry mentioned, they are bringing some things. We also have some things indoors. We'll have some board games, the bounce houses. So just lots for everybody to get involved in.
It is an event that you will not want to miss. Again, part of the year-long 50th anniversary celebration of the Children's Mentoring Connection. Stacy Shaw with the CMC and Jerry McNamee with the Findlay YMCA are going to be a part of it as well. Thank you both for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, of course, and that is goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.